if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 151. This is our 2021 Genesis Invitational Tips and Picks episode. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA Tour action. Good morning, PW. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm not bad. How are you?
I'm all right. The frozen north seems to have disappeared. I actually went out for a walk in the daylight and it wasn't minus 30 with the wind chill yesterday. It's quite nice.
It's a revelation. Do you know, by the weekend, Steve, you better get those shorts out and those milky white legs.
I know. I actually said to the good wife, looking at their BBC weather, there might be an opportunity to get the barbecue out at some point. I know.
Yeah. Any sign of sun.
I'm sure that won't happen. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available free of charge. There is no paywall. Please subscribe to the podcast and drive the popularity of the show. On Twitter, Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I've just recorded that, actually. And I caught myself 32 minutes into the show and realised I should really stop gabbling and actually just let the people have it. I must be quite excited about this week.
It's a big week.
Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. I've got a bit of a challenge, actually, Paul. A couple of weeks ago, our good friends over in the United States took us through the 100 reviews barrier on Apple Podcasts. We are currently sitting at 91 reviews on the UK Apple podcast site. So if you're in the UK and you support the show and you like what you hear each and every week and you listen to us, please take 30 seconds or a minute out of your time and write us a 5-star review if you're in the United Kingdom. Of course, if you're in the States and you want to do the same, you press ahead. But it's that these reviews are undoubtedly they really do help in terms of just getting Apple to give your podcast more visibility. And I think we were in the top 5 last week for golf podcasts in the United Kingdom. So
yeah.
And that's all down to our listeners, Paul.
We've had some lovely chart positions. So yes, thanks for everyone who's contributed so far. And as Steve said, if you want to write a few lines, then please do.
I've got a couple here. This one is from Big Blind John. I don't know where he is, but Big Blind John, appreciate your time. The title is Top Golf Podcast. He's given us 5 stars. These gents are on top of all things golf. Never played the game myself. Well, nor of Paul and I at any kind of standard. Believe me,
big blind John.
My God. But I can make money off of it because of the free advice they give out. By far my favourite golf podcast, and it isn't even close. Please keep up the great work, and I look forward to listening and making more money in the future. That is Big Blind John.
Lovely, thanks,
John. Oh, sorry, he has told us where he is. It was just a split in the page. He's in Colorado Springs in Colorado, and Big Blind John was our 100th Apple podcast review in the United States.
Brilliant.
A milestone. Must listen for golf betting, 5 stars. This one is from Niall, and he's in Belfast. Great pod. which I'll listen to for both bets and as part of a build-up to tournaments, even if I'm not betting. Excellent stats and great for the lowdown on favourites and longer shots alike. Get listening to inform your bets and for a laugh about blacklisted never backing again players. Ain't that the truth?
That's a long old list, Steve.
Well, I must say that used to include, well, it probably still does, Daniel Berger. I can't. I just don't get on with Daniel Berger. This is a great segue into last week. I don't know if you noticed that. I just can't stand the bloke.
It was a horrible price last week as well, wasn't
and
it?
And 14 to 1 post DJ withdrawal. Was he 12 to 1?
Oh, yeah, I was in that kind of virtually unbackable range after DJ. It wasn't particularly backable before DJ withdrew, did he? But he's not one of my top of my list players either.
You can tell now quite easily who bookmakers do not want to take a penny of money on. I think we know who it is this week. that's fairly obvious from what we're seeing. But yes, they didn't want to take a penny on Berger last week.
No.
He'd won once in 77 PGA Tour outings. That was clearly this year at Colonial. But he's definitely jumped a level. And to do what he did, to double bogey 18 on Saturday, so that Spieth had a two-shot lead going into Sunday, by hitting it out of bounds into Maverick McNealy's back garden. And then to eagle the 18th when he was tied for the lead with said Maverick McNealy, who lives at Pebble Beach. That showed some bottle, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. No, he was impressive. Kind of infuriating to watch, isn't he? But you get various characteristics with these players, and you just have to get on with it, don't you? But fair play to him. Good finish in the end. Nate Lashley had a good chance as well, didn't he? Until he imploded towards the end. And
how many times have we said it, Paul? It's a lot with this golf. It's who these guys are up against. I don't care. If he's standing on the 18th tee and he's head-to-head with Dustin Johnson or Rory McIlroy, I don't think Daniel Berger wins. If he's head-to-head with Maverick McNealy and Nate Lashley throwing in doubles and, he's won Southwind twice. I know the win at Colonial last year was loaded because it was the first tournament back. Yeah. The other thing I think does favour Berger at the moment is no crowds. I don't think he's the sort that can handle the hammering that these crowds dish out when they're actually there. But yes, fair play to got the
job. Few with a chance, wasn't it? Cantlay had a decent chance as well. Clearly your man Spieth going into the final round with a couple of shots lead. Another good opportunity for you to get one over the line, but it just isn't quite happening at the moment, sadly.
No. I thought Spieth had something about him, but as he said in his post-round interview, I actually listened to that this morning in bed. He said the key to Sunday was actually getting that fast start. He said the strategy was hold that two-shot lead. If I could eat that out to three when I made the turn back into the wind, I had some shots to defend that lead with. But shooting one over the first six holes was while people were shooting three and four under. Game over. He said, I lost the lead and all of a sudden it all turned sour. Yeah, he's honest, isn't he?
Yeah, it is. And it's difficult to see, if you're kind of treading water, even slowly going backwards, and there's guys out there, birdieing three, four, five out of the first six or seven holes, then it's pretty demoralising, I guess. And, it pretty changes your outlook. You have to start to try and find ways to push things on, and mistakes start to creep in. Ultimately, his long game wasn't too bad, and there's clearly something percolating with Spieth. He's going to be a popular pick at the Masters, should he continue his form over the next few weeks.
Hasn't he been slashed 16 to 1 all of a sudden?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think people were picking up 66s not so long ago, and he's rapidly been cut down to a more Jordan Spieth at the Masters-like number. you know, people will take that chance on him because his record there is so stellar. But yeah, it was his long game wasn't too bad. It, you know, putting was probably the bit that let him down last week, I guess.
It was the putter. The putter let Jordan Spieth down. But yeah, he's percolated. I would never choose him at Riviera. That is not a Jordan Spieth golf course. Riviera is all about power. It's all about having that ability to hit the ball a long distance on key holes. I mean, you've only got to look at the winners list. But anyway, I'm jumping the gun here. But yes, there were going to be certain tracks moving forward. Don't forget that he's missed. I think he can still get into the WGC in Florida next week, but he's going to have get a top two, three finish this week, which is possible, I suppose. But yeah, he knew that Pebble Beach last week was a huge opportunity for him to get back into that world top 50, to keep that record of attending all the WGCs that he has since like 2013. But I don't think Riviera's more is his jam, really. And I did say to you last week on the podcast, you look at the Florida swing, that isn't his jam either. That's the problem. He doesn't get on with any Florida golf course apart from Copperhead. And Copperhead, as we know, isn't your typical Florida water everywhere golf course. It's more of a Carolina classical tree line job, which is the kind of course that he loves.
Yeah. I mean, at the peak of his powers, he can compete pretty much anywhere, or has competed. And he's got a couple of top tens, I think, round here in the past. Yes. But no, I'm with you. I think, you know, apart from the fact that there will be this clear motivation to keep that streak going, as you're saying, there is that final chance for players who can find their way into the top 50 of the world rankings this week, or the top 10 of the FedEx Cup. But that's going to demand a pretty lofty position, finishing position from Spieth, and a few of the others who are on the cusp of it as well. And given the strength of this field this week, it's, you know, incredible field, which I'm sure you'll go through in a second, but that's going to take some doing by some of these guys who have got to find something, got to pull something out of the bag this week.
They've actually moved Valspar this year to May, so it's actually after the Masters.
Right.
So for someone like Jordan Spieth, he's now faced with the, if he can get into the WGC next week, he's playing. He'd play that at Concession. He never plays Bay Hill. He's got the Players' Championship, which he's finished third there once, but that, again, doesn't shout Jordan Spieth overly. He never plays the Honda Classic. And then you're into the WGC Dell Technologies match play.
Yeah.
Where I don't. What's his current ranking? Let's have a look. Is he in the top 64? It will have clearly jumped over the last couple of weeks.
It would have pushed.
He sneaked into 62nd in the world.
Right. And that normally goes down a little bit further than 64 because you get a few players who really don't want to play the match play. But yes, yeah.
I can only see, looking at that schedule, I can only see his odds getting bigger for the Masters. Unless he does something crazy and goes absolutely nuts this week at Riviera, I don't really see where the good finishes are coming from. Because they don't shout Jordan Spieth tracks to me.
Yeah.
Harbour Town, yes. Valspar, yes. He's got Colonial the week after the PGA. Yeah, they're clearly good Jordan Spieth tracks, but Florida, nah. Not for me. So we'll see. I'll be interested to see who's going to be playing that Puerto Rico Open next week.
Yeah. Well, there's always one where you can try and pluck out a little bit of value further down, can't you?
It is. And then, like last year, Victor Hovland won at 12 to 1. So.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's going to be a Victor Hovland type that plays that this year, because Zalatoris has just sneaked into the WGC. I think he was 49th in the world. He managed to get in there, Zalatoris. So there's no Zalatoris turning up at 6-1 to win the Puerto Rico Open next week.
Yeah, and you tend to get a handful of reasonable European Tour-style players, don't you, come over and play this as well. Might be a couple to look at there. Might be a little bit under the radar. Anyway, for next week, that one.
Before we talk Genesis, I was just looking. I pulled together some analysis first thing this morning, just to look at people's performances over the last 25 outings, yeah? That's just a nominal number I came up with over a Weetabix this morning. I'll look at the last 25 outings, both European Tour, PGA Tour, and just look to see, of the top guys in golf, how the hard stats break down, yeah, in terms of wins and in terms of each-way payouts, yeah?
Yeah.
So, I've been generous, on apart from short field cut tournaments, I've taken 8 places each way, and I just looked at it. Because now we've got this clear distinction in the betting this week at the Genesis Invitational. And I'm hearing all the usual scump about, Dustin Johnson's price at 6-1, 11-2, it's unfair, it's a rubbish price. You know, how can you have him at 6-1 and John Rahm and Rory McIlroy at 12-1 and all this? So I just thought I'd have a look at the numbers and see where it stacks up. If you look at Dustin, last 25 outings, in fact, I think it's last 16 when you look at it, he's won 5 and finished in the each-way places in another 5 times.
Yeah.
4 of those wins on the PGA Tour, the other one on the European Tour in Saudi. The closest to that is John Rahm. He's won 4 times, 2 of those on the PGA Tour, 2 on the European Tour. He's also had 8 each-way places on top of that. So actually, if you look at it from a I received a payout perspective, be that a win, clearly, or an each-way payout, he sits at 48% of his last 25 outings. He's actually returned some cash if you backed him. Dustin Johnson's at 40%. So I can kind of see that argument in terms of the gap between DJ and Rahm being too big based on those numbers. But then you say, well, actually, DJ scored 4 PGA Tour victories in that time. John, 2.
Yeah.
JT, 2 wins, 9 each-way payouts. So that's 44%.
Yeah. So I was going to say, one of those wins, clearly for DJ, was the Masters as well, which is on a slightly different level to the ones that Rahm's been winning. But yes.
Xander, as we know, 0 wins, 10 each-way payouts in his last 25. The one that really got me, I mean, we can look at Rory, 1 win in his last 25 outings, 1 on the PGA Tour, none on the European Tour, and 9 each-way payouts. So that's, again, 40%. That's the same as Dustin Johnson. But where Dustin's won 5, Rory's won 1 of 25. Bryson DeChambeau, 2 wins and 11 additional each-way payouts. So he's basically returned money 13 of his 25 last outings, which is the highest ratio of anybody in the top 15 in the world. I think DeChambeau's price is very volatile and you can always get a bit of value on Bryson. I mean, I thought his price this week was decent at 18-1. Or was it 16s? 16s or 18s was out there?
Yeah. He's volatile is really the right word, isn't it? Because his performances are also volatile. And some you're either getting a very good performance or you're getting something that's potentially a miscut or particularly poor. Mm. There's not much in between, is there? So he's either paying out win or a place result for you or missing it by quite some stretch. While he tries to work out exactly what his own personal approach is as he's tinkering with his body and his equipment and all sorts.
Just to Daniel Berger, we were talking about him earlier. Daniel Berger, 2 wins in his last 25, so fair play, and an additional 6 each-way payout. So that's 32% of his last 25 outings. Tony T4 Finau, 0 wins, 11 each-way payouts across his last 25 outings.
Yeah, it's hyper consistent. Is there a case for Finau whenever you see him at the 20-25-1 mark, just backing him each way regardless? You know, on the basis that he probably isn't going to win, but he probably, 50% of the time or thereabouts from your analysis there, he is actually rewarding each way backers who take the plunge on him.
We have said all along, haven't we? Don't ever back him at the 3M Open when he's 12-1. Back him in a good field at 33-1 and you won't go wrong.
Yeah.
A bit skinny this week, I thought, at 25s, but clearly he's got 3 top 10s in the 3 consecutive top 10s. Bound to be this price, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just some. I'll keep an eye on those numbers. Why not? I think that's something just to throw in the mix. It's just interesting to see, you know, cold hard facts about players, because we all have you know, why is Zander the same price this week as Justin Thomas? Because clearly Justin Thomas can win and Zander doesn't win. It's these kind of metrics and flows that you see in the betting market each and every week.
Yeah.
What it does suggest to me is that someone like a Brooks Koepka, who clearly comes to the party at majors, might be a decent bet at the Masters this year. Wasn't he seventh there last year when he was absolutely playing dorky kind of goal? He's 14-1 right now with Betfred.
Yeah, he kind of lifts his game, doesn't he? And that's why the Phoenix result was a little bit of a surprise, really, I guess.
Back the ceiling, Paul. 14-1 for the Masters, Brooks Koepka. And this week he's 22-1 to win the Genesis Invitational. Makes sense of that. But yeah, as you say, he wins majors. He doesn't tend to win domestic titles, does he, as much? He focuses on those big prizes.
Yeah.
Okay. Genesis Invitational. The best field of the year by a country mile. It is absolutely stacked. It's kind of a major, isn't it? It's a major without Tiger Woods, Webb Simpson and Patrick Reed. And Tyrrell Hatton, to his credit. Tyrrell's not playing us. I take it Tyrrell's going straight to Florida WGC.
Yeah, you'd have thought so.
Where his new base is. DJ 11-2. There was a slither of 13-2 at Bet365 yesterday morning, 10 a.m. over in the UK. And that got...
for about 6 minutes.
Yeah, that got cut within 6 minutes, yeah. Someone said 13-2, Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, I'll have a bit of that.
Oh, I'm having that. Bang. No other book was open and they were cutting his price within 6 minutes, Dustin Johnson. That tells you a story. Riviera Country Club. Let's talk through the course and the agronomy. When you look at the numbers, it feels like it's... and this, you know, when I started doing this job 12 years ago, you'd look at Riviera and go, oh yeah, it's kind of a short track. Anyone can play around it. And back then, I remember 2010, Steve Stricker won it, and Steve Stricker is never the longest of hitters. Yeah. And each and every year, I mean, even last year, we had Scott Brown coming second at 500-1. You know, Brown's hardly a banger. Kuchar was right in the mix, wasn't he? When he basically got to the lead, was it just a shot off first round leader? And then he was in the final group Sunday with Scott and Rory.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a huge banger. But when you read Adam Scott, JB Holmes, Bubba Watson three times, Dustin Johnson, yeah, there's some heavy hands there, isn't there? Some proper powerful drivers of the golf ball.
Yeah. And some proper ball strikers in there as well.
Tony Finau's finished runner-up here. JT's finished runner-up here. You know, McIlroy's got a cracking record. It does shout to me that distance off the tee is an advantage. But it's not the be-all and end-all, because I don't think it isn't all about strokes going off the tee. Far from it. It's a classical test. It's a par 71. It's in, you know, suburbs of Los Angeles, Pacific Palisades. Tree lined. It's a 35 out, 36 back, par 71, three par fives, Hogan's Alley, tree lined fairways, 7,500 square feet greens, which are quite chunky. But they feature Poana putting surfaces. And of course, we have this week where we have to mention Kikuyu grass, because there's Kikuyu grass fairways and Kikuyu grass rough. So just think Torrey Pines South, because that's the only other kart course that features Kikuyu grass. And the correlation between Torrey Pines and here is obvious. Absolutely obvious when you look at the past winners here. Adam Scott, second at Torrey Pines a few years ago, and was right in the mix a couple of weeks ago before he went backwards with my money on him. JB Holmes, before he won here in 2019, he'd finished runner-up at Torrey Pines, fourth at Torrey Pines and sixth at Torrey Pines. Dustin Johnson, Yes, his record at Torrey Pines is surprisingly bad, but you go right back, he did actually finish third there 1 year. Bubba Watson, a winner at Torrey Pines. John Merrick. John Merrick won here in 2013 at some ridiculous price. He'd finished sixth at a US Open 2008 when Tiger Woods won with one leg.
Yeah.
And there's this definite link between Torrey Pines and here. That's not even debatable. Also, previous winners here, apart from James Harm, had all shown form here prior to actually getting over the line here. So Adam Scott had won here and finished runner-up a couple of times. JB Holmes, 3rd, 6th, 7th, 8th. For a guy that was 150-1, you could actually look at him and say, well, he's got great course form.
Yeah.
Bit of a course specialist. Yeah.
It's one of those tracks, isn't it? It is one of those, you know, you get somewhere, you can look at these courses and look at the results and kind of infer that you don't need that course history, that positive course results. But this is certainly one of those ones where it's well worth looking at the course history stats and using that as the basis and foundation of your starting point, I think.
If you look at current players that are playing outstanding golf, Victor Hovland's one. You were on him a couple of weeks ago in Saudi. Another one is clearly Joachim the Wunderkind Niemann. But you want to see that they, Hovland's making his debut here, and Niemann's played here twice and not done a great deal. I think he had 165 round in there, which showed he could play the course on his debut. And you look at Niemann, you think, wow, he's a great price in the market this week. You know, 45, 50-1 out there. Yeah. I wanted to back him, but I couldn't. I said to you all along, the course that suited Niemann the best was Phoenix, and he never played it. So, for whatever reason, never played it. But I don't know. This, to me, could suit him. I'd be interested in him at the price, because it's a decent value price. And he's coming off second at Kapalua, second at the Sony Open. But he hasn't got that course for him. And that's the thing with the Riviera. It does seem to be the kind of classical test you need to learn. You don't see many here that kind of contend on their course debut, which makes Rory McIlroy's record here even more impressive. Because I don't think McIlroy's ever finished out the top six here in three tries.
Yeah, he's been popular as well this week, hasn't he? We'll see why.
Regulars will know, we always say Rory McIlroy wins. He doesn't tend to win. When he's had a period of nothing, it's that 12-14-1 price point where eventually he gets the win. So it's close at the moment. It's very close. He's coming up to the Players soon. Would you back him next week if he was 14-1 for the WGC at a golf course we don't know anything about?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I need to dig deeper into the course for next week. I've started my analysis the last couple of days, but I'd want to see a little bit more out of him, and he's not been that consistent really. I mean, his irons looked good a couple of weeks back. Was it Phoenix on his last start? And he was back down into the kind of 50th bracket, wasn't he, for greens and regulation, if you're looking at those historic, you know, the old style stats as to how he was performing with his approach play. And not quite enough there for me, but I can see people are interested in his course record, fourth and fifth the last 2 years, and some will take the chance, each for their own.
I don't know. I always think with Rory, He tends to drive the ball brilliantly, when he's at his pomp, long and devilishly straight. At the moment, last two, 70th and top 52 for driving accuracy last time out at Phoenix. It seems to be long and crooked.
Yeah. Yeah, the other point, and I'm sure you'll get to it.
Not that that's an issue here. Crooked actually isn't an issue at Riviera.
No, I think you need to hit your green.
You just got to hit the tee shot the right side of the fairway. Don't matter if it's in the rough or on the fairway. It's that kind of course. It's angles. It's all about angles, this course.
Yeah, and conditions-wise, which, as I say, I'm sure you'll get into in a second, it doesn't seem to be that soft this year, which clearly Rory thrives when there's a little bit more cut in the ground. And if it is on the bouncier and firmer side this week, then that doesn't really play to his strengths either, I don't think.
I agree. He's better on firmer ground than you think. I think he was second in
Africa. Listen, there's a world-class player. You know, and at the end of the day, he can turn his hand to a lot of stuff. But I think he plays his best golf when his distance control is absolutely bang on, and it's soft and receptive, and he can just hit it to absolutely where he wants.
Congressional US Open victory, eh? That's Rory, 18 under on a long, soft golf course where the ball just stops.
Just throwing those irons to about 3 feet.
So, yes, Poana Greens, Kikuyu Grass, in terms of fairways and rough. The first hole, par 5, is in the top 5 easiest holes on the whole PGA Tour. And then you have the par 4, 10th on the backside, which is one of the toughest holes on the PGA Tour. It's a real quirky mix, Riviera. It's a great golf course. Love it here with the fans. Love 18, where you've got the stand on the hill and that wall of people. It's a beautiful, beautiful golf course. One of the best that they play each year. The players love it. The fact that Tiger's taken this tournament on, even though it's a course he can't get on with, but that just tells you everything. You know, Hogan's Alley, great course. Clearly, he's building it now wants to build it into the biggest non-major or WGC event on the PGA Tour. And, he's getting there with this kind of field. This field now, the only other field that gets close to it will be the Memorial Tournament, which, again, of course, is Jack's tournament. So it all makes sense. One thing I think that is absolutely vital here, and it's something that you just tapped on, course conditions. Now, this week, it's going to be warmer. This isn't going to be Pebble Beach, 14 degrees Celsius. This is going to be Los Angeles, 22 degrees. So, players will love that. We're not going to have any wind. Not a breath of wind, really. 5, 6, 7 miles an hour. So that's not a factor. But what you tend to get here, it's either soft or it's firm. And clearly, Los Angeles, this part of California, doesn't get a lot of rain. I don't know. That's maybe why a lot of people choose to live here, like Frankie Molinari just has done. Not a lot of rain. And this course looks like it's going to be firm this week, because I didn't see any rain had fallen on this area since the 29th of January. And January wasn't that wet either. So I get the feeling this is going to be, as we saw last year, that 11, 12 under winning total, stretching, strategic. I think they'll do it feels Phoenix-y to me. I'm just looking at the lead score progression. So 2020, last year, 7 under was leading after round 1, 9 under after round 2, 10 under after round 3, and 11 under after round 4. That course is getting firmer, the ball's releasing more on those greens, and the scoring, you're just not going to shoot straight rounds here of 64 and win. Just doesn't happen.
No. And it's a challenging course in those conditions, and you're going to make birdies, but you're also going to make bogeys and doubles. And if you go back through Scott's performance, the latter end of the tournament last year, he wasn't squeaky clean. There were mistakes there. There were a lot of mistakes. His putter was working quite nicely, which, when you combine that with the fact that Adam Scott is at his best, one of the world's best ball strikers, then that's how he managed to get over the line. But he wasn't exactly going away from the field at the time, as you've just demonstrated there with those numbers.
It's a course with bite, isn't it, Paul? It's got bite. Yeah. It's got double bogeys all over this golf course. There's some tremendously difficult par fours and par threes.
There's a par 3. Is it the fourth hole, the par 3 from memory? A brutal par 3. Really tough one to actually hit the green itself.
There are some nasty, yeah. I'm just looking at my sheet. There are some vicious holes. The fourth, the par 3. Yeah, that played a quarter of a stroke over par last year.
Yeah.
It was the third most difficult hole on the course. The hardest is the par 4, 15th. That played a 0.3 of a stroke over par across the tournament last year, the 15th. It played 4.3 shots as opposed to a par of 4. So, yes, there's some vicious stuff here. And again, that doesn't shout Jordan Spieth to me, because Jordan Spieth has got a double or a triple in him around here. And when you're firing doubles and triples, you're not going to win the golf tournament. You've got to minimise mistakes.
Yeah.
Bogies, yeah, you're going to get them, but doubles and triples, difficult.
Difficult to come back from. You just don't want those card busters, do you?
The thing I always take from this, especially when it's going to be firm and especially when it's going to be fast, I'll read you just this. Adam Scott won here last year, clearly. He topped greens in regulation. I know, greens in regulation, what a rubbish stat that is. Well, it actually paints a story, though. He topped GIR last year, 72.2% greens in reg. He missed 20 of 72 greens.
Yeah.
And he was the best on the course for hitting greens. You think, okay, well, how does that stack up to the previous year? Well, the previous year was quite soft, actually, because Justin Thomas, when that course was soft, just scorched it. And then he went backwards when it started to firm up. JB Holmes won that year. He topped greens in regulation. He was second for greens in regulation. Guess what? 52 of 72 greens. 72.2%. He missed 20 greens that week. And it just screams to me, you've got to have short game here. Dustin Johnson, when he won here in 2017, he topped greens in regulation. He hit 56 of 72 greens, 77.8%. So he still missed 16 greens that week, and he topped GIR. So, if you're the best ball striker this week, I don't care who you are. You can be Rory McIlroy. You can be Dustin Johnson. You can be Bryson DeChambeau. You can be Colin Morikawa. Anybody, you're going to be missing 20 greens. So you've got to have the ability, the scrambling ability, not the strokes gained around the green ability, the scrambling ability to be able to get up and down around here. And that points towards players that are patient and strategic, knowing that if they miss the green, where they need to miss it. Because if you short your side self around here, and some of these bunkers that are deep, you are doomed. Absolutely doomed. Now, as you know, I keep trackers, 8-week trackers. Basically track all the skill sets over the last eight weeks. I'll take you through the top 12 of this week's scrambling stat, yeah? So these are players over the last 12 weeks in this field, ranked in this field, who have been best at scrambling. I'll go in reverse order. 12, tied. Daniel Berger, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Bubba Watson. Well, there's one winner around here. 11, Mark Leishman. Great record. Got a couple of top fives here and great record at Torrey Pines. Same grasses. 9, Mackenzie Hughes, who's a short game specialist. And Francesco Molinari. 7, Siwoo Kim, who finished third here a couple of years ago. Xander Schauffele. Tied for 4th, Joachim Niemann, Nick Taylor, Brendan Todd. Tied for 2nd, Patrick Cantlay and Dustin Johnson. And number 1, US Open champion Bryson DeChambeau. And all we ever talk about with Bryson, all we ever hear, is that Bryson's all about 400-yard drives. Well, actually, he's a lot more than that, isn't he? Because he's scrambling and putting, absolutely elite level. And that just, he's the best scrambler in this field over the last 8 weeks, statistically.
Just needs to sort those irons out, those short irons and those pitches, and he's a world beater.
He's an interesting name this week, DeChambeau. As we've spoke towards the top of the show, if he does get in the mix, he hangs around. He doesn't disappear. If he's near the top of the leaderboard, he's not going away. So I think DeChambeau's a decent bet this week. I haven't picked him though. But there's just some names in there. I mean, Bubba's in there, DJ's in there. There's two players there that have won around here 4 times. and they're scrambling well right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you need short game here.
Yeah, or the ability, I guess, if you do make the mistakes, to kind of just block it out, shrug it off, and move on. Yeah. The guys with a you know, the hot head, or you know, the temperament that starts seeing bogeys followed by more bogeys, more mistakes. So they're going to be the ones who quickly drift down the leaderboard.
Proper golf course, isn't it? Effectively,
yeah, absolutely, particularly with this field, yeah.
Top 12 T2 green strokes gained. I'll run you through that as well. There's a couple of names in there I know that you and I have gone for. 12, Colin Morikawa. 11, Sergio Garcia. 10, Bryson. 9, Xander. 8, T4 Tony. 7, John Rahm. 6, Patrick Cantlay. You can see why the best names do well each week, don't you? 4, yeah. This Australian sensation, Cam Davis, tied with Victor Hovland. 3, Rory McIlroy. 2, Dustin Johnson. Number 1, Joakim Niemann.
Yeah, there's quite a few in there with potential this week, I think.
My take at the top of the market was I was absolutely torn between two players yesterday, and I actually built my tips in reverse order because I was kind of umming and ahhing what I was going to do. I knew that I wanted to take one of the market leaders, but I wasn't. It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's like separating very wafer thin decisions. I thought long and hard about Rory. I like the price. I love his record here. He is playing some nice stuff at the moment, but as yet he just hasn't merged it all together. Like you said earlier, one week his irons are great and the driving's a bit awry. Then the next week, the driving's great and the approach play's not so cool. And then sometimes he marries it all together and the putter's stone cold. I tend to take Abu Dhabi out of it because he plays well there every time he turns up in Abu Dhabi and never wins. So
yeah,
I don't know about Abu.
Yeah. Well, no, but he should be.
But he's playing great. He's playing good stuff, and you just know with Rory, the win is coming. It's coming. Yeah. He's getting to the price point where he does win after a long break of not winning. You know, we're not getting 9-2, 11-2, stupid prices about him. We're getting 12s and 14s. This is where he starts to. He'll get a win, right? So that's. But I haven't taken. Whenever I was writing longer price tips, I just kept thinking to myself, the trouble with all this is, Steve, you can build this guy up, build that guy up. Great reason to back him. But just banging you on the back of the head is, well, if Dustin Johnson turns up and Dustin Johnson plays to 95% of his capability this week, he wins. And we discussed on the podcast last week, and that went down really well, by the way, with Barry, the fact that we were having time to chat about different kind of topics rather than just about tips and courses. We said, are we getting to a period now which is slightly more than just a really hot streak? And I think this week kind of goes with this. It's like if Dustin was to win this week, are we seeing something quite special happening here? And I just want to be on that train. I want to be on that train that says, well, do you know what? I wasn't blown out the water because Dustin won by, you know, Dustin just walked away with it and all of a sudden you're fighting for second place with your each way punts. So I just thought I'd cover him off. So I went 4.6-1. And the fact is, when you've got Bet365 slashing a number within 10 minutes, yeah, you know that bookmakers this week do not want to take money on Dustin Johnson in any way, shape or form.
No, and he had to be a longer price than you'd seen him, and you know, some of the outings recently. You know, clearly he was shorter in Saudi. It wasn't a poor field in Saudi by any stretch, was it? It was a strong field. But you expected him to be a little longer here, simply because there are so many other players around him who are very, very capable of winning. But I'm with you, Steve. I mean, I very rarely back a market leader at single prices, single digit prices, but I've backed him at 6-1. I've win only, and I don't see any logic to leave him out, really. If you you're kind of following the same thought process that you had there. You either find a market where Dustin Johnson isn't in that market, so without DJ,
yeah, or eradicate him, yeah. Yeah,
one of the other sub-markets, or you back him to win, because if he wins this golf tournament, then everyone else is playing for a place, and this is cutting your potential winnings down by quite a lot. But he didn't even get out first gear, or second gear in Saudi. He was strong from tee to green. He was poor on the greens. He's come into a course that he's won on before. He's got a cracking record around it. And he's putting on Poana greens, which he's the best Poana putter in this field.
Mate.
As simple as that.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. On my preview, clearly, golf betting system, just type that into your search engine, blah, blah, blah. I've started using DuckDuckGo, Paul, my search engine.
Yeah,
and I find it far better than Google.
I like their privacy stance. It's very innovative. Check it out, guys.
Check it out. DuckDuckGo, great search engine. I'm using it on my mobile and my laptop now. But yes, Dustin Johnson in this field has won 11 titles on Poana greens or bentgrass Poa mix greens since 2008. The next best, guess who? Bubba Watson, 6. And then we jump down to 4. Bryson, Rory, and our old muck of Brant Snedeker. Those were the days, eh? Brant on Poa. Yeah. So, yes, this is just his best surface by a mile. Loves it. Yeah. I also love the fact that he, for some reason, put himself up to play the AT&T Pro-Am. He probably thought that it was going to be a Pro-Am and that he could play with Wayne Gretzky, and then realised, oh, well, it's not a Pro-Am. I don't like his schedule over the previous year. He's finished 9th here and 10th here the last 2 years, and he went 3 consecutive weeks. He flew out to Saudi, played Saudi, flew straight back, played Pebble, straight to Riviera. And I don't care who you are, that is going to be tiring. That is going to be weighing on you, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they're long old days as well at the when they're playing the Pro-Am at the AT&T.
You've got the time zone changes of the travel. You've got 8-hour rounds at Pebble. You come straight here. Doesn't work. So for him to WD last week and spend 10 days at Sherwood, at Wayne's house, in his condo, playing Sherwood Country Club, perfect build-up. Perfect build-up. I actually think that the Genesis, he's won this once. I actually think that this tournament means something to him. Always tries his best here. So I think DJ at 6-1, I took him over Rory. That's how I fell on it. I can see some value in DeChambeau. I think DeChambeau wouldn't be a bad bet either. I also fell on a guy that's playing some absolutely outstanding stuff right now. We mentioned his name in some of those categories earlier. Patrick Cantlay. Local man. Long Beach. Grew up in Long Beach, Los Angeles. Went to UCLA here. Has played this course lots and lots and lots of times throughout college. Great record here. 6th, 15th, 17th. And you just cannot argue with the fact that he's playing some outstanding golf right now. He's outside Ryder Cup qualification and Olympic qualification right now. And he's 8th in the world.
Yeah.
So he's got to keep playing. Yeah, if he wants to play in the Olympics, if that's any kind of dream for him. I know that he's going to get a pick in the Ryder Cup. But everyone wants to qualify on merit, especially Team USA. If you can get in the top 6 players in the American rankings, you are some kind of player. But yeah, 8th at the Shriners, that was in Las Vegas, Nevada. He won the Zozo Championship at Sherwood Country Club, Thousand Oaks, California. He was 17th at the Masters, 13th at the Tournament of Champions, start the year off. And then 2nd at the Amex, Palm Springs, California. And 3rd last week at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, where he actually shot the course record on day one. Yeah. I just think Cantlay. I remember being on him at Memorial in 2019 when he won that. A big tournament. And people, 16-1 on Patrick Cantlay. I'm not having that, 18-1. It's far too short in this field. You know, X is better than him, Y is better than him, and he won. He kind of just shows you. Yeah, you just cannot argue with anything about his game right now. He's scrambling well. He's driving the ball well. He's hitting tons of greens. He's putting well. He just didn't get the job done last week at Pebble. But I think in this field, I'd just about take 18 to 1 on him. I think he's got a great chance this week, Cantley. And he's exactly what you said 5 minutes earlier. He's one of those guys that will make a bogey and just completely forget about it and play the next hole just in the strategic way that he feels fit for that hole.
Good mindset to have, isn't it?
It is for here.
It's a winner's mindset, a major champion's mindset for the future.
So 18 to 1, it wasn't the best price. It wasn't the worst price. I discounted Daniel Berger at 18 to 1 last week in a far poorer field than this. I'd like more, but you're not going to get more because the guy's playing so well. So 18 to 1, I've taken it. Who is the first of your... I mean, I know that you've backed DJ personally. I know that you're on him. Yeah. Is there anyone towards the top of the market you've also taken, or you're a bit deep in the prices?
Yeah, there is one other, slightly further down than the two you've gone for so far. Yeah, clearly I've backed DJ. Colin Morikawa I've backed, who is available generally around about the 30 to 1 mark. And for me, there's some disparity here because he's sixth in the world, but... you have to scroll down to around about 11th, 12th in the betting to find him. And for me, he's still been underrated. Yet, if you go back and have a look at his performances through his career to date, he's won 3 of his 43 professional starts. And one of those was a major championship. You know, at the age of 24, there's plenty more to come from Morikawa, I think. This is a home game for him, effectively. He was born and bred in Los Angeles. He lives in Vegas now, but should be clearly comfortable here in his home state. And I think the only thing pushing his price out a little bit is the fact that he finished 68th in Dubai in his last start.
Yeah.
Have a look at his Instagram.
He only went there for a check, didn't he? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But tee to green, he was absolutely shocking on the greens, wasn't he? Shocking. Yeah. But tee to green, he was good.
Yeah, I think off the tee, it was fine. But yeah, have a look at his Instagram because he was out there ballooning and he had plenty of other distractions while he was out there, it would seem. So yeah, I'm not entirely convinced he was 100% there for the golf and to win the golf tournament. So excluding that, I mean, prior to that, he was, what, 7th at the Tournament of Champions, 7th at the Sony Open. First for strokes gained putting at the Sony Open, which was an eye-opener. 26th here last year on debut, he was 2nd for strokes gained approach, and again that bodes well, I think. He opened with 73, closed with 73, but if you look in the two rounds in between, 67, 68, and both of those were in the top 10 rounds of the day, so quickly got to grips with the track and the conditions out there. And, you know, he should be comfortable with it, being an LA lad when he was younger. All 3 of his wins have come with some Poanen and the greens as well, so
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot. I like his chances a lot here this week. As an each way shot, I would still maintain that I think DJ is going to win the tournament. So these players a little bit further down, they do need to be each way bets. But yeah, 30 to 1 or thereabouts. Well worth it in my view.
Yeah, I can see Morikawa. I gave him close consideration, but the only fear with me, I'm sorry for peeing on your strawberries, but you know what I'm going to say. I just think he struggles around the green.
Yeah.
He's 149th at the moment for scrambling on tour.
Yeah, he's got to hit, you know, the upper number of those stats that you read out before. He needs to be in the mid to high 70s in terms of his greens hit this week.
And he's got to have a great week with the scrambling game, or he's got to be missing in the right spots. And actually, he's got the ability because he's so. I mean, he's got one of the best iron players on the planet. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, I can see Morikawa. He's got that local power knowledge as well. And I'm trying to cast my mind back to the leaderboard at TPC Harding Park, and you know we've seen McIlroy win around there in the match play, and you had Morikawa. Paul Casey's done well here. He almost won the PGA, didn't he? Dustin Johnson was the leader for a period of time. DeChambeau was right up there. Finau was up there. And you look, they've all played well at Riviera.
Yeah.
So there's undoubtedly that if he can win at Arden Park, he can win around here. So yeah, I get that. And it's true, isn't it? His price, he seems to be one of these players. You know, he's not a Xander who's constantly 12 to 1 every week and doesn't win. You've got Colin that does win. He's won 2 in his last 25 outings, yeah, including a major. And he's out of 33 to 1.
Yeah.
30 to 1.
And what, when you backed him at the PGA, what was he, 33, 35 to 1?
He was 33 to 1.
Yeah.
Oh, 35s. Yeah, 35s. Yeah, 35s. Wow. Yeah, I get that. I get that. Next one for me. Yeah, it's an auto bet. For, you know, Bubba Watson. So why wouldn't you take him? Bubba tracks three times, loves Poa, loves, you know, just loves the greens, can actually putt on these greens for some bizarre reason. This course seems to suit rubbish putters. So
yeah, there's plenty of poor putters who've done well around him. You only have to look at last year, don't you?
What, Sung Kang?
I was thinking more Adam Scott.
Adam Scott, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've never really thought of Torrey Pines or here as a putter's golf course.
No.
That was until Patrick Reed won at Torrey Pines. But Patrick Reed can play. Patrick Reed does what Patrick Reed does. People will be chatting at their listening device right now. Yeah, he cheats, but we're not going to go down that route. But yes, Watson's just an auto bet, isn't he? I think, you know, when you're getting 45 to 1 on Bubba Watson at a course he's won at three times, why wouldn't you? And actually at Phoenix, started horribly. Missed the cut at Torrey Pines. Bearing in mind that was his year debut. And then progressively, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you could just see that Bubba was actually just doing what Bubba does, hitting the ball a long way, hitting quite a few greens. And actually putted, made some putts in Phoenix.
Yeah.
So he'll come in with no expectation whatsoever. I put him up last year and he'd finished second at Phoenix. And as we saw again at the Masters, don't ever back Bubba Watson when he's got some expectation on his shoulders and he knows that he's got a chance. He's better when he just comes freewheeling in here. No expectations, no problems, no worries. He's in the top 50 in the world just. He's made it to the WGC next week.
Yeah, he's in it.
He'll just play what he wants to do. And actually, that can be devastating around here, Bubba.
Yeah, I know he's well capable, wasn't he? I think the biggest thing holding that back from your perspective, Steve, is that both I and Barry are on Bubba as well this week. So
yeah, game over.
Yeah, we're in serious trouble.
So no, Bubba will miss the cut.
Yeah, he's very difficult to overlook at Riviera, and there was enough in that 22nd place finish at Phoenix to give you a little bit of confidence that he can improve on that this week.
One that's a bit under the radar, I thought, but has been playing some decent stuff and has got a cast iron sort of correlating course form look here is Mark Leishman. His irons at the moment are absolutely fabulous. And if we remember, like last year, I think COVID and it just really hit his game. Leishman in my strokes gained trackers over the last 8 weeks, he's fourth for strokes gained on approach, behind guess who? Joachim Niemann, Dustin Johnson and Victor Hovland. He's fourth in that particular category. He's also 10th, tied 10th with Cam Davis in strokes gained total over the last 8 weeks, so basically strokes gained current form. So he's playing well under the radar. I never fancied him to defend. He doesn't defend titles at Torrey Pines. But you just look at where he plays well. Torrey Pines, he's played well here in the past. Couple of top four finishes, top five finishes. He just plays well on big, boy, classical, old-style golf courses in America. That's his bread and butter. And also, I remember him winning at Conway Farms. And Conway Farms is another track that really sort of links in well to here. Because Conway Farms is a Tom Fazio design. Yep. And this is a Tom Fazio renovation. He's done lots of work here at Fazio. And Conway Farms, he won the BMW Championship there a few years ago. So, yeah, there's lots to like, I think, about Mark Leishman this week. Mm. Australian, Kikuyu grass, firm, fiery conditions. Great short game. And he's putting quite nicely at the moment. He's actually in the top 10 strokes gained putting over the last 8 weeks in my trackers.
Yeah, so, well, when he's good and when he's on form, he does putt well, Leishman.
The average winning price here over the last seven renewals is 71 to 1. Mm. So you're not going to put me off Bubba at that price. You're not going to put me off Mark Leishman at that price because they tend to be. I mean, Scott won here last year at 33 to 1.
Yeah.
It happens. The other one, I know that you could never have part of him. And a lot of people will say, and I'll be saying exactly the same thing come Sunday, Don't ever back a player that closes his eyes when he putts. But I've had to, I've had to take Sergio. You know, you have to take your medicine sometimes. And there's certain players that you go back to the well on, and Sergio's one of those for me. But you cannot argue right now. And you said this the other week on this podcast. His driving right now, which for me is the strength of his game. And they always say, take a player when their strength is actually at the peak of its powers.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, we were discussing Rory out earlier. Is his driving, which is probably the best part of his game, at the peak of its powers right now? And you'd say, well, no, it's not really. You look at Sergio, is his driving, which is the best asset of his game, at its peak right now? And you'd say, yeah, it is. Because his driving game right now is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. It's as I said in the previous pod, you could easily put a highlights reel together of his driving. It's been very strong recently. Yeah, he went on my list for maybe temporarily, but he's on there at the moment. So I can't go near him, but I can see where you're coming from with this, Steve.
2 eagles and 23 birdies, 1 eagle and 19 birdies and then 19 birdies. Those are his last three outings across the Tournament of Champions at Kapalua. That was the first time he'd played there since 2006. He finished 11th. Guess what? Couldn't make any long putts because he can't. His strokes gained putting numbers are awful. But Dubai and Saudi, he's in the mix, right in the mix. He went off in the final group on Sunday at the Emirates at the Dubai Desert Classic, where Casey won. He's playing some great stuff. He's got a half-decent record here. He's got three top six finishes across 07, 12 and 15, and it's Ryder Cup year. If he wants to make the Ryder Cup team, he's got to keep playing good golf. Yep. He's as good a putter. He's probably as good a putter as a Jason Kokrak or an Adam Scott, really, isn't he? As he can't putt, but actually, there's a lot of bad putters that have done really well here.
Yeah,
so I don't know. He's just about doing enough for me to. He was just about doing enough for me at 66-1 to say, oh, do you know what? I'll take a little punt on Sergio. A top 50 in the world player at 66-1 on a course that I think will suit him. I'll have a bit of that. So I've gone Garcia, Mark Leishman, Big Bad Bubba, Patrick Cantlay, and I've done the sin of all sins. I've backed Dustin Johnson at 6-1.
Yeah.
The bet that no bookmaker wants to take. And that's why you're getting that prize.
I think that's a prudent approach this week too.
Let's talk triple digits here, Paul, because even though this field is loaded, I'll just read you some numbers. Scott Brown finished runner up here last year at 500-1.
Yeah.
Sung Kang was right up there at 250-1. Max Homer was in the mix at 100-1, and Joel Damon also scored an each way payout at 275-1.
Yeah.
JB Holmes has won this at 150-1 a couple of years ago. Siwoo Kim was 125-1 that week. There are triple digits scoring each way full payouts here each and every year. So who do you fancy at triple digits this week?
No, there are a number, aren't there? I spoke to Barry briefly yesterday. He couldn't be on today, but he's back Max Homer. He's not quite triple digits, I don't think, but clearly fancies a bit of Homer. The other one Barry's backed is James Hahn, clearly a previous winner here. And you're getting Hahn around about the 125-1 mark. Clearly, he played well for a long chunk at Phoenix, didn't he? And then
he played far too well, didn't he? Because he hit the lead and was leading by about three shots, and then realised what the hell he was doing.
Yeah.
And got on the bogey train, but
all unravelled a bit, didn't it?
He's there or thereabouts, though, isn't he, Hahn? So he's clearly playing some good stuff.
Yes. I can say that bet, and Barry's taking him on. Personally, I've backed two, both of them available out there at the moment at 200-1. Slightly less if you want more places, but each their own as ever. First one I've backed is Ches Reavie, and as you said, going back to the well for some of your players, I'm back to the well for a bit of Ches. Didn't do too badly last week. It was a poor start to the year for Ches, but he was the wrong side of the draw last week. He opened with three bogeys in his first four holes, shot 74. So staring another missed cut in the face, but then recovered to finish 16th overall, 67, 71, 67, his final three rounds last week. And perhaps that's going to spur him onto something a little bit better going forward. I mean, his first for strokes gained approach last week, fifth for strokes gained tee to green. In old money, that was seventh for drive and accuracy, third for greens and regulation. And that's much more like the Ches Reavie that we expect and not the results that we'd seen from the previous few weeks with William Chesney. Seventh here in 2016, 10th here last year as well. I mean, there's some dross in there as well. He's missed the cut here six times, so it's a bit of hit and miss. But then again, at that kind of price, what do you expect, I guess? You know, you're taking a chance on him to produce one of his better weeks rather than one of his worst. And I'm quite happy to take him on at that kind of price. With decent, rubbing shoulders with decent players, finished third at the US Open when we were on board.
Yeah.
Sixth at the St Jude last year as well. So both of those in very strong fields. And I think... when the course suits, he's quite capable of getting himself into an each-way paying position. And I think that's probably all we can expect. I'd be surprised if he went on and actually won the tournament. But, at that kind of price, with the each-way terms that are out there this week, and, the eight places is generally available over here in the UK. There's a little bit of 10 places each way from Ball Sports this week as well. With some slightly reduced prices if you fancy that angle instead. So a bit of Ches for me. The other one I've backed is Kyung Hoon Lee, KH Lee.
Yep.
And again, he's available out there at 200-1.
Outstanding last time out in Phoenix.
It was, yeah. He didn't do much wrong, really, did he? 66, 66, 66, and then 68 to finish. And you've got the likes of Koepka and finished alongside Xander. There's no disgrace in that.
Absolutely.
He's getting closer, isn't he?
Mm.
He's getting close. Four wins in Japan and Asia over the years and nothing on the PGA Tour yet. So that was his best effort to date. But not far away, I don't think.
Koreans have always played well around here. I can go back to the days of KJ Choi. Sangmoon Bae used to do all right around here. We had Siwoo Kim a few years ago. He came off a fifth, didn't he, at Pebble Beach and then got a top three here at 125-1. So there's no reason why Kung Hoon Lee can't do exactly the same thing.
No. I think he's got a better chance than his price suggests out there this week. First for strokes gained around the green last time. First for strokes gained tee to green in Phoenix as well. Record here 25th, 13th from his two starts.
Wow! Really?
Yeah.
Outstanding.
First for strokes gained approach in 2019. Third for strokes gained putting last year. So if you put all that together, first for strokes gained putting last year. First for strokes gained approach 2019. First for strokes gained around the green last time out. First for strokes gained tee to green in Phoenix. He puts all that together. He wins by six or eight here this week.
He's also coming off the best finish of his career.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the Phoenix Open. So he'll be
highest reaping world ranking.
Perhaps. Absolutely, yeah. He'll be buoyed, won't he? Biggest paycheck ever.
Also,
that's an interesting bet.
So, hopefully he can sneak into one of the each-way paying positions as well this week. So there's him and Ches. My two long shots. I'm back to first round leader as well, which is Keegan Bradley at 100-1.
I've got to get on this.
Yeah, he's that type, isn't he? Yeah, he's that type, isn't he?
Yeah.
And you've listed a lot of history of first round performances in your preview this week, and there's not much between the early and late starters historically. And as you said, the conditions this week are going to be pretty much dead flat, aren't they, for the course of the 4 days. So regardless of his tee time, I can't see there's going to be a great deal of difference there. And he's one of these regular first-round leader appearance or players who appears in the first-round leaderboards really quite regularly. Last time he was the first-round leader was Torrey Pines last year, which clearly holds some correlation here. And if you go through his recent record, he's had three first-round leaders finishes in his last 45 starts. So one in 15 for a guy who's 100-1 to prevail in that market here this week. Phoenix, he was second to halfway, sixth after the first day, so started out well enough there. He was third after day one at the RSM before Christmas. He's opened with a 66 here in 2019, which was decent enough. for an each-way position at that tournament. He's also finished second and fourth overall here in previous years gone by. So can play the course, can get off to a fast start. He's the kind of player that if you've backed him outright, can get infuriating because he often does have a fast start and then kind of drifts away as the tournament progresses. But if he's going to have a decent first round or a decent round this week, let's hope it's the first round for Keegan.
Betfair Sportsbook are hanging 8 places each way at 50 odds, 150-1 about Matthew Neesmith. And I don't know if that's a great bet, top 8. I think 6-1 top 20 with the same company is a decent bet. 6-1 top 20 Matthew Neesmith. This Neesmith guy, I mentioned him at the end of last year at the RSM Classic, got right in the mix, got too much for him on Sunday, went backwards.
Yeah.
But he is unbelievably good, this guy. Last three outings, second at Pebble at Farmers Insurance at Torrey Pines for strokes gained approach, 11th for strokes gained approach in Phoenix, and third last week at Pebble Beach. Tee to green, 8th at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines, 13th at the Phoenix Open, and 4th last week at Pebble Beach. So that's 4th across Pebble Beach, 54 holes. He finished 5th for strokes gained total at the AT&T last week because he clearly didn't play Spyglass very well on his round around there. 7th and 16th in his last two outings, Neesmith. He's never played here. That's a negative, yeah. That's probably why I wouldn't take the each-way punt, to be honest. He was 11th at Pebble Beach last year. So 11th at Pebble Beach. Clearly gets an okay with Poa. No, he's not a disaster with the putt in the flat blade on Poa. I just think top 26-1 on Neesmith is a good punt because this guy from tee to green is exceptional.
Yep.
And he's not bad around the greens either. I'm seeing he hasn't been outside the top 23 for strokes gained around the green in those three outings either. He was 9th for around the green last week. So if he misses greens, he's good at scrambling as well.
Yeah, it was 7th and 16th overall his last two starts, so he would have obliged in that market in those last two outings as well. So yeah, again, I can see your angle of attack there, Stephen.
It'll be 12-1 next week for the Puerto Rico Open, where he finished where he finished 6th last year on tournament debut.
Yeah, the hot favourite.
You wait and see, mate. Everyone will be backing Matthew Neesmith at 25-1 or 20-1. I'll probably join. Paul, thank you for your time. Should be a good tournament.
Yeah, it should be. Looking forward to this one. Yeah, best of luck this week.
And to you. Let's see if we can get a winner. We say that every week.
It's coming, Steve.
I hope. Yeah. So's Christmas. Just think, they'll open up the pubs at some stage this year. That's coming as well.
There's a lot
to look forward to. Right. Thank you for your time. Thank you to the listeners. It's been a bit longer than usual, but it's a great golf tournament, so we've had plenty to natter about. I hope you enjoy the Genesis Invitational. Hope your bets go well. We'll be back again next week for the first World Golf Championship of 2021, the WGC at the Concession and the Puerto Rico Open. See you later.